I'm here in the Marlborough Theatre in the green room at the beginning of the Brighton Fringe. And David, I found something out about you, and I just feel I need to put it to you. I didn't know you were an actor.
Well, I'm not really an actor per se. I think I'm more of a performer, a bit of a dabbler, really. Like, I think I'm waiting for the perfect person to come and perform my words, and I haven't found that person yet, so I'm the next best thing, unfortunately. I've been working on this new show, Holocene, for about a year or so up at BAC and also at the Nightingale, and it finally starts on the 14th and 15th of May. It's like the first proper public outing of it, so it's going to be an interesting mishmash of volcanoes and anxiety and interesting French people. So yeah, hopefully we'll be something.
But when I saw the image for Holocene, I think the reason I'm saying to you now I didn't know you were an actor is I didn't recognise that image as you.
That was taken by my partner, so luckily he's quite good with the camera. So, but yeah, I'm really happy with that image, I think, for some reason. It was quite good for something that we fashioned in an afternoon with cocoa powder. I think it was pretty good.
But did you have to make a tough decision then? Because in these ages where I know you've won sort of Arts Council funding and recognition for your work, is the reason you're doing it because of, you know, a tough decision that there's no one else to do it?
Well, I think that my work is always, or so far my work has also always been about trying to combine autobiography with something else. And the last piece that I made was about mixing my story and finding kind of analogous stories in the rest of kind of queer history. And this has been very much about my own kind of a conversation about mental health and about anxiety and obsessions and compulsions, and how some things can be described as positive obsessions and some are very negative. And the way the people that I'm focusing on are the Morris and Catcher Craft, these volcanologists, were totally obsessed with volcanoes. It was devoted their whole lives to the study and research. And that, I suppose, could be considered a positive obsession, a real kind of finding of your meaning in life. And there's so many ways, especially in modern culture, you can get confused. And I think that's kind of what it's a bit of an exploration of, is finding that safe route or that passion through that kind of takes you through life. It feels like something very personal. I think I'm in the process, hopefully, of trying to get myself out of the way of my work, and I haven't quite got that yet. So at one point, hopefully, I'll be able to write a play or whatever that is. But at the moment, it always seems that I get in the way of that, and I'm not. You know, I think that's where I am at the moment as a maker, and I think that's just, I can't do anything about it. So I've just got to go with it. And if it's still interesting, then I will do it. So,
but also in all your recent work, you know, you are a researcher too. Research plays a heavy part, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that that's partly just my kind of response to the world, really, is just I'm a bit of a knowledge fiend. I'm a gossiper. And I think I just like to know everything that's going, as much as I can, of what's going on. And I think that that's been a really interesting part of this, is just kind of, it's kind of reconnecting with stuff I was interested in my childhood as well, like fossils and rocks and things like that. And you kind of put them to one side as you get a bit older, and you realise it's funny the kind of bits of information that stick with you. So I get my sort of rock collection that I had when I was 9. I had a very lame rock collection. And all of a sudden, all of this stuff comes flooding back that you thought you'd forgotten. So I think it's, there's definitely an element of research that I think, and just of kind of experimenting with form as well, that's a big part of what I do at the moment. Yeah.
Now, I've met people already during this fringe who, when they tell me the story of their work, they have only been working on what they're working on, and they've dropped everything and focused, and they couldn't imagine doing anything else. And I've met other people who are running a venue, writing a play, directing something else, also doing a bit of part-time work, and you're one of those second people, aren't you?
Definitely, yeah. No, I think it's a strength to what I do, is that I've got a lot of different interests, and I can pick things up and put things down, and I love running a venue. Wouldn't want to not do it at the moment. It pays, whereas making work doesn't. It pays a tiny bit. I've always had a split focus. I'm a scatterbrain naturally. I think it fits with my personality type. Until I drop all the eggs and then they all smash, I will try and keep them in the basket. Yeah.
But you're looking well and you're looking energised, and there's an energy about the place at the moment. And I've interviewed you before in previous years where you've not been enjoying running the Marlborough as much, and there's been, you know, uncertainties around it. So what's going on around the place now that's making you look so well?
Well, I live here now, which is kind of strange. I live above the theatre. So any potential stalkers, this is where I live. I think that me and Tarek and I have been running this place for, this is our fifth Fringe, so we must be doing something reasonably well, because we've got a consistency to what we do now, and I think people hopefully have started to understand a little bit more about the Marlborough programme and about what we aim to give Fringe audiences, which is hopefully a sort of a quality experience of something quite unusual. I think we've hit that note quite well this year. I think there's some really great pieces, so it just seemed to kind of come together more naturally than it has done in previous years.
So I've been taking these one by one. We've sort of covered Holocene, and we're covering the Marlborough now. So what's changed at the Marlborough since we were here last year?
Well, we have air conditioning now, which I know we keep going on about it, but it's made such a massive difference, because we had, I'm sure, I'm joint with the Nightingale, of which I'm a venue of which is very fond. It's boiling, especially when you've got five shows in there back to back, and now hopefully we can make it a bit more of a pleasant experience for people to, well, that's a cast mobile phone going off, I don't know whose that is. And I think it just feels a little bit slicker whilst retaining its kind of rustic charm, let's say.
And are you blasting the air conditioning on between shows?
Oh yeah.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, hopefully it'll be a bit more of a pleasant experience, and you'll notice the kind of increased production values. So that's kind of what we're aiming. I think to keep it interesting, we just try and, you know, chip away at something. And people have been really supportive. We've had like donations and bits and pieces and all sorts of stuff coming in. So that's really good.
And in terms of the balance between, you know, Pink Fringe and the other Fringe you put on, how do you manage that?
Well, Pink Fringe, because it kind of exists year round, and it's very much me. It's difficult to explain, and I think we've probably not made it easy, is that it's Pink Fringe is me and Tarek as producers. It's kind of when we decide to either put a piece of work on or present something, it's kind of, we use that Pink Fringe brand, and it's around kind of queer culture and LGBT arts, or however you want to describe it. And there's always a cluster of work that kind of fits into that within the Fringe that we call Pink Fringe. Right. But then on a year-round basis, it's all little, you know, other little projects going on and all sorts of stuff. So, and then I think that kind of complements the Marlborough because of the identity of the building and just the kind of people that drink here. And it's kind of rich tradition of LGBT life in Brighton. And it's about, how it fits with the Marlborough is how it fits with Brighton, is that it's just part of the makeup of this city. Everyone always fits together however they, you know, they try to fit together wherever they can. And I think that's what we do with the programme, is just to try and put, you know, we're defined by work that is interesting and we think is quality, rather than exactly what, you know, whether it's coming from a particular portion of society. Mm-hmm. So, and hopefully it all smudges together into one attractive Marlborough smudge. Mm-hmm.
So this is a guy with a show on, a guy with a venue to run, who, that's not enough for you, is it? There's something going on out in Kemptown.
We have, hopefully, it's all being sorted in the next couple of weeks. We are taking on the lease of a church called St Mark's Chapel, which is down by Sussex Square, which will be, hopefully, from the summer onwards, a new arts development space for Brighton. It's a really lovely, beautiful church space with a kind of adjoining studio kind of hall thing, and lots of other little rooms in there. And the main focus is that we just want it to become a place where people can come and rehearse and develop work. It's not going to be a kind of programmed venue, probably will during the festival, hopefully. But year round, we really want to focus on people developing work and of making it a kind of hub for conversations with the community. It's a part of Brighton that doesn't feature very often in the festival conversation. And obviously you've got Whitehawk adjoining as well, and we really want to try and engage a bit with those communities and do things like, it's a perfect space for circus and for developing larger scale pieces. So we're really excited at the possibility of creating another, something quite different, something that's not about getting an audience in all the time. and that can actually be responsive to the community's needs. So.
And just take us back to, I don't know whether that moment or moments, I mean, were you just walking past it and thought, oh, I'd like that? How did you get to walk in there and go, right, I've got a vision for this?
It was to do with Dip Your Toe, really, which is a project we did last year where we built 6 Victorian bathing machines and they were up around the festival. And we were looking for somewhere to store them. And it was at a meeting about the boat project where I met, met Father Andrew, who is the priest who's responsible for St. George's Church. And has converted St. George's Church into this amazing community centre underneath there as well. And they had this empty church space that was owned by Rodine, but it was given back to the parish with the intention that it would be converted into an art centre. So immediately our ears all pricked up and we just thought, let's give it a go, see what happens. So myself and Faith Dodkins, who's a producer, and Greg Mickleborough, who's technical guy, have been, and Janine Fletcher, one of the wrongies, have been working on it ever since, really. It's sort of plugging away.
And how do you decide when you're actually, you know, either in danger of burning out or you've just got too much on?
Festival usually is when I just make these decisions. It's usually like the flashpoint and you realise, okay, I think I should put something down now for a while. And I love a good, this deadline has really meant me want to finish my show. And then after that, I don't know what will come next. So I've got a bit of a hole. So maybe it will be the Spire, or maybe it will be doing something with the Marlborough. We've got some funding decisions due, so that could be quite exciting. It's all, you know, it's all living by the sword, dying by the sword, really. So you never know what's happening next.
But I guess, I mean, this is maybe it's a challenge to you, but one thing I've noticed over the years is people who multitask and are also arts makers, the thing they're in danger of neglecting is the onward journey of their own shows.
Yeah.
So they do brighten, they burn out a little bit, and then the next thing you hear is they're working on something new. And I wondered, why didn't that tour? So how are you going to hold safe your new show?
I am determined that I do this more than 2 times. It is I've spent so long stressing and worrying about this piece. I'm not the person to make judgments on whether it's any good or not. I'm interested in it and I hope other people are as well. And I'd really love for it to have a life beyond Brighton. I mean, I've got some relationships, hopefully, with venues in London, but let's see what happens, I think. Hopefully they'll invite me and I can see what happens. I really am determined. I totally know what you mean, is that you see everybody. It's a festival. Everyone does a festival show. But then there are great artists as well, like people like Rachel Blackman and Sue McLean, that are taking work all over the country now, so that start in Brighton. And I want to be one of those rather than just purely about the town.
Final question. Describe David Shepherd in 5 years' time.
A lot more grey hair. Grey hair. That's 4. Yeah. That's 4 words. That's okay. And an exclamation point. But that's not a word. But yeah, something like that. Yeah. But hopefully I'll be still doing what I'm doing in some form or another.
Yeah. David Shepherd, thanks very much.